Okay, so we're officially on the top of Chof Amud Aleph. We might just go back a little bit just to pick up the thread, and also there was a rush I wanted to look at briefly. So we've started this new Mishnah is obviously big shift as much as we have any big shifts in this in the first six chapters of Baba Kama, which is really all just one big topic, really sort of goes back and forth between all sorts of things. But this new Mishnah, we're focusing more on Shein. We've been focusing on Regel since the beginning of the chapter, mostly, right? Regel sort of as it moves, and Shein now the animal eating. So we started talking about last time the what was normal to eat. We talked about the animal that let's say broke the jar in order to get to the food, right? What does that count? Well, you know, how does that count if it breaks the jar in order to get to the food inside? Should that be Keren, right? To the fact that it's breaking the jar? No, maybe it should be Shein, which is what we said, because again, the fact that it's normal for it to be eating the food, it's normal for it to try and get at the food as well, and that we had this discussion, I think we spoke about the discussion about Bipatura. Yeah, we definitely talked about this. Bipatura, the Machlokas Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel, right at the bottom of Yud Tet Amud Bet. So let's just go back to that, actually, because because I wanted to talk about this Rashi. Although the truth is, maybe let's not do the whole thing back inside. I'll say this sort of the general case outside. And we were talking about, as I said, what was normal for the animal to eat, whether it was normal for the animal to eat bread or not, bread, meat, that sort of stuff. We talked about the fact that there's a difference between cooked meat and raw meat. Maybe there's a difference between a chaya and a behema, right? Different types of animals. So all those sorts of things we'd thrown into it. And we had also mentioned the fact that, and this I just want to make sure we remember it, because I think we're going to come back across this a couple of times, that we had a machlokes between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel at the bottom of Yud Tet Amud Bet. The very last Rashi had said that the Bipatura, in order to explain why it was unusual for an animal to be eating this food, Rashi had said, Bipatura, following the language of the Gemara, Sha'al Hashulchon Ochlu She'ein Darka Bekach, the fact that the food had been on their table and the animal had jumped on top of the table to eat it, and that was why it was unusual, and that was, in a sense, why it lowered it down, right? That was it wasn't considered a regular Shein because it had jumped on the table to do it. Rabbeinu Chananel had disagreed. So Rabbeinu Chananel is usually printed, my Gemara, it's like a tiny sort of sliver on the side. We don't need to read it inside, but it's that's where you find him, sort of around the outside of a Gemara often, and he is always the smallest, or not always, well, you know, it's one of the sort of smallest fonts that we out there. He changed it, also the very, very last line of the Rabbeinu Chananel, to petuta, not petura, on a table, but the different type of food. It's a petuta, which is like more crushed up breadcrumbs. And he said basocha marak, it's like in a soup, right? Some sort of sauce. And that's why he was basically shifting it to something which is more normal for an animal to eat. And many explained that the reason is because this machlokas is whether the location of the food should be enough to consider it different, right? Should be enough to consider it a shinui. Shinui, something which is different, is obviously very critical to whether something is normal, whether it's considered to be normal or not. So according to Rashi, the fact that it's on the table as opposed to on the floor is significant enough. According to Rabbeinu Chananel, no, it's not enough. And again, that's going to be part of Rabbeinu Chananel's impetus to disagree, is based on our Gemara over here on the top. The other... It's also one of the Rishonim, similar sort of time. It's a good question. I don't think he was, because Rabbeinu Chananel should have been one of the very first. Rabbeinu Chananel, if I remember correctly, his father was one of the four. There were four sort of captives who were taken over to Ashkenaz, which started off the whole era of the Rishonim, really. The fact that Torah shifted away from Babylon, right, in the time of the Amoraim and the Gaonim, and moved over to Eastern Europe, I'm pretty sure that was Rabbeinu Chananel's father, so he was definitely a very, very early Rishon.
So he wasn't commenting on...
Correct, he's not commenting on Rashi per se, yeah. I don't remember the exact years, but, I mean, Rashi's also one of the earlier Rishonim, so I'm not sure exactly how much they overlapped. I have to look up the exact years, I can't remember. Yeah, the years... Well, Rashi has the years of Rashi or of everybody? Oh, does it really? I don't know that. I have separate books. I have separate books. Which one? The Torah Chaim Gemara?
No, the purple. No, not the Torah. What's it? The Living Torah. Purple.
Oh, really? I never knew that. Okay, very interesting. Oh, wow. Okay, there you go. So no, I have a couple of books which have... oh, there you go. That one at the back. The one at the back. On the... They're both 11th century. Yeah, I'm just not sure. Yeah, I'm just not sure. Yes, so does it say... So I don't know. Rashi...
Died 1053.
And Rashi died in 1040, I think, right? So they overlapped. I'm just not sure how close they were. In Where was he from, Rabbi Nachanan?
11th century,
Kairouan
Rabbi.
Where?
Indeed.
Kairouan.
I need to go to
it. Okay, fine. All right, I'm not sure. Anyway.
Tunisia, born 990.
But then he moved across, I think, with his father. I think I'm pretty sure that was the story, if I remember correctly. Anyway, and then Rashi obviously was in France, right, based in France. Troyes, famously, that's where Rashi was from. And... So they're definitely around that sort of time, but he's not. But the point is, then neither of them is directly commenting on the other, or so far as we can see. Okay, the other Rashi I wanted to point out is the one just before. No, it's a couple, two lines above that. When we were talking about this whole thing, Asala Chatzi Nezek, we're talking about the basket, the fact that you only pay half damages for the basket. Rashi points out, Dimashunahu, towards the end of the third last line of Rashi, Dimashunahu, because it's unusual. Ukugon de Tofas Nizak, De'ein Donin. So what does he mean, Ukugon de Tofas Nizak? It's Mashunah, it's unusual. So let's just. I just want to point out, sometimes the Gemara is talking in theory, right? Over here, what the Gemara had said was Chayvei Rav Yehuda L'shalem Nezek Shalem. The Gemara had been bringing a story, a sort of a practical example where Rav Yehuda had actually required someone to pay for the basket half damages. So Rashi's bothered by this question. He doesn't spell out the question, but Rashi says the Mishunahu is unusual, that's why you're paying half damages, but now he needs to explain something else, an unwritten question which we're going to explain. So let's look at his answer and then I'll explain what's bothering him. He'll do it a bit backwards. Okay, going to Tofas Nizak, he says. It must be, we're talking about a case where the Nizak, the damaged party, had already taken the money. Right, taking the money now the fellow comes along to Beis Din and says he took this half damages. Is he entitled to it? And then the Beis Din says yes, really he should have the money. Why was that the case? Because de ain donin dine knossos bebovel. We don't rule on dine knossos on fines in Babylon, in Bovel. This is a very important principle. All the stuff that we're talking about here, a lot of it is not relevant, but the Bet Din nowadays doesn't have an ability to, or doesn't have the power to be able to enforce a lot of these things, fines being one particular thing. So there are certain parts of Dine Momenus, right, of these monetary laws that are, you are liable to pay, right, based on what's expected. But when we spoke about half damages, we had this whole discussion about Palga Nizka Knossa or Palga Nizka Mamona. Is half damages, does it mean that you're paying what you should be paying and you've got a break, right, you've got off in a sense for half of it? Or no, really you should be paying nothing, but you've been given a fine, you've been given a half damages fine. So if it's a fine, our principle is that in Bovel, the only people who are allowed to give fines are people with real smicha. What does it mean, real smicha? It doesn't mean you got it from a real yeshiva as opposed to not a real yeshiva or whatever. It means real smicha was from the old days, was from you know, an unbroken chain from Moshe. It was done in a very specific way and can only be handed over in the land of Israel. Now, that chain has been broken nowadays, and certainly in these times, it was very recently... it wasn't quite broken, but it was. But those who were in Babylon, right, the Dayanim, the Torah sages who were in Babylon at the time, didn't have the ability. They didn't have that smicha because they were away from Israel. They had moved away, and they were unable to enforce a knas, right, to enforce a fine. And that's why Rashi is saying that it's true they can't enforce the fine, but if the person had already taken the money, let's say the tofas nizak, the person had already taken the half damages, they also could uphold that. They could say, really, you are liable to pay that. So in a sense, what he's taken is okay. So again, what do we you know, if there's no smicha nowadays, what are we doing? What exactly is going on? So that's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which talks about the concept of what's called shlichu saihu, that there is those who are, well, I guess rabbis and dayanim nowadays are in a sense appointees. They are fulfilling a shlichut. You're like emissaries of those who came before, of the earlier generations. But there are limitations to what we can do, what we can't do. And one of those limitations is about dinei kenosos, is about fines. I think there's a much bigger discussion about all of Nezikin, generally, you know, about enforcing damages nowadays. It's a much harder thing to enforce. A modern Bet Din will, I think, deal with a lot of contracts, right, and a lot of monetary disputes between people, between individuals, and between things like that. But I'm pretty sure they don't get as involved in, I guess also people own fewer animals now, or there's probably less animal damages now. Although that's actually one of the reasons why. That's also linked, the idea of shechiach, what's normal, what's expected, what is something that a Bet Din would routinely deal with, also comes into what they're allowed to deal with as well. So I just wanted to point that out. It's really touching on a much, much broader topic, but just to note the fact that there are limitations to what we can do nowadays, and already from the time of the Gemara. That's what Rashi's saying. Already these Amoraim, who we're dealing with, Rav Yehuda in this case, was unable to enforce a fine. All he was able to do was, if someone had already taken money, he could uphold it, because that was the correct thing to do. Okay, so that was really just left over from last time. Let's go back ahead to this full stop on the top of Chof Amud Aleph. Okay, five lines down. Let's go from there. And again, lots of interesting things to see this time around as well. So Omar Ilfa, that's his name, that's the gentleman's name, he says as follows: Behema Birashus Harabim, if you have an animal in the public domain. I want to do the case before as well. Although it is linked to what happened before, I just want to start off with that case. I think it's helpful for us to set the scene as well. It's really an additional story, sort of backing up what we'd said earlier. So Hahu Barcha, hopefully this will be familiar because this is what we ended off with last time. Hahu Barcha, there was a goat. Dechaza Lifta, Apuma, and, excuse me, Apuma de Donna, so it took the lefus, I think we said, was a turnip, in the top of a barrel, right in the top of a utensil. Apuma is the mouth of, so it was in the mouth of the of this don, of this utensil. Sorich solik, so it grabbed a hold of the a barrel. Ochla liliftov a tavri. This is what I mentioned earlier. Ochla liliftov a tavri ladana. So it ate the levas, it ate the turnip, and it broke the barrel in doing so. Chayve rova a liftov a adana. Rova had said that it's liable for both nezek sholim, full damages. Now you usually would say breaking a barrel, if an animal sort of goes ahead and causes that sort of damage, that would be keren, and therefore would only be half damages. But since it was doing it as part of the eating, right, as it grabbed out the turnip, as it were, with its mouth, then that's why, my timer, the Gemara explains, kibben de urche lemechal lifta, since it's normal for the animal to be eating this, turnip, urcheinami lesuruche ulemislak, it's also normal for it to sort of throw the barrel around a little bit, you know, this utensil around a little bit, and therefore, the damage that was caused is also considered to be normal. Okay, let's move on. Omar Ilfa says as follows: Behema birushus harabim. You have an animal in the public domain. Uposhta tzavara va'ochla. It stretches out its neck and eats something. May algabe chaverta, from on its friend, i.e. the different animal is carrying food on its back, and this first animal comes and eats the food from upon that animal. So chayeves, he says it's liable. My timer, gabe chaverta kechatzer anizak domi. The fact that it's eating it from upon its friend is like eating it from the private domain. So what's the case? So we're talking about an animal that's in Rishat Arabim, as he said at the beginning. It's in the public domain. Usually, shein birishat Arabim, we say is potter. Right, the fact that you have food that's lying around in the public domain and an animal eats it it's your loss. It's your loss because the food was sitting in the public domain and the animal, there's an exemption for an animal eating in the public domain. But over here, what's it done? Over here, it's eaten from the animal's back. Now, it's not. One could argue, for example, I think you could argue. I don't think anyone says this. Rashi says ubehema. This is the second Rashi down. Ubehema birshus arabim. The animal is in the public domain. Umegalgeles vaosi mirshus hayochid. Oh no, sorry, that's the different one. Sorry. That's the next case. Okay, so I was just wondering if anyone sort of spells out the fact that it says here kagon, the fact that it's like it is in the Rishus HaYochid, to me sounds like it's not really considered to be a Rishus HaYochid. You can argue, in the laws of Shabbat, for example, if you have a large area that is quite tall, even though it is in the public domain, it's considered to be its own separate domain. So, for instance, if you have something that's 10, it doesn't have to be that tall. 10 tefachim is about a meter tall. So if you have let's say, for example, the top of a car, okay? The top of a car, right? Now, the top of a car is really considered to be Rishut HaYochid in many ways, right? It's considered to, it's tall, right? It's its own private domain. You don't need to fence it off. That's a different thing, but it is considered to be its own domain, as it were, right? If you were, for example, if you were to carry something, I mean, obviously in an Erev, but if you were to pick something up out on Shabbat, there are two types of carrying. There's carrying walking within a Rishus HaRabim, right? That's problematic. But even if you're standing still, to take something from a private domain into a public domain is also a problem. So let's say you're standing outside your house outside of an Erev, right? You're standing outside your house, you reach into the window and pull something outside. Even while you're standing still, you're also not allowed to do that. So the same thing would be true off the top of a car. Right, you're also not allowed to pull something off the top of a car. So it's considered to be a Rishut HaYochid. It's a different domain. So I don't think that's what it's saying over here. I don't think it's saying that the top of the animal is considered to be its own private domain. I think it's saying it's kago. Right? Didn't it say that? It said kirushut. Kechotzer hanizik domi, exactly. It's similar to the chotzer hanizik. It's not really considered to be the chotzer hanizik. Kechotzer hanizik domi. It's similar to that. It's similar to that. And I think some point out the fact that it has to sort of. So I have here a note from the Rashba, a little bit of a later Rishon, from Spain as well, if I remember correctly. Not as well, we haven't had anyone from Spain. But he says that the fact also that the, again, you have to sort of take, note the language of the Gemara, the fact that it's poshta tzavara, the fact that it stretches out its neck in order to do that, is also what the Gemara is telling us is significant in this case. That if it's just walking along and the food is hanging very low and it's almost literally in its path, you know, just as the animal's walking, there's food that's sort of literally right in its face, then he says that would be okay. That would be considered to be Birushut Tarabim. But it's only when it's sort of poshta tzavara, it's sort of reaching for it, it's going for something which is above on the animal's, on the animal's back. Then it's kachotzer hanizak dummy. Then that's why it's considered to be kachotzer hanizak, because it sort of seems to be going out of its way to get that food, and that's why you would be liable in that particular case. Okay, so that's also important to note that a lot of this is to do with what's expected, right? To do with what's expected, to do with what's normal, what the parameters of that are. Let's suggest that this is a support for what? For the following case. Hoisa kuposo mufleshes la'achorev. Let's say a person had a box, right, or a bag, something sort of slung over their back. Upashta tzavar v'achla mimenu chayeves. And again, the animal stretched out its neck and ate from this. And now this is off the back of a person, right? This is like eating from the backpack or something. I don't know, rummaging inside someone's backpack. It does that. Then they are liable. Kida omar rova. And again, we have a similar thing that Rova suggested. Sorry. So now maybe we're saying that should be the same thing, right? That is following Ilfa. So we say, no, that might be a little bit different. There, that's talking about Kida Omar Rova. Rova had explained that particular case was Bekofetzes. That was where the animal had jumped, right? It had gone particularly far in order to do that. So Hochanami Bekofetzes. He says, Hochanami Bekofetzes, again, the same thing over here. That we're talking about when the animal jumped, the animal really went out of its way. It's not just about stretching out his neck. Stretching out his neck is not enough. It's not, that's not quite significant enough to make it considered to be Kechotzer HaNizak, or to make it considered liable. It's only Bekofetzes when it really jumped to try and do it. And not only that, I should point out, when we're talking about Bekofetzes, Rova's not, Ilfa is saying, let's just categorize them maybe. Ilfa is saying that the fact that it stretches out his neck is like it's eating from the private domain, and therefore you're liable shein damages. You're liable for eating, the animal's liable for eating, just like it would have eaten in someone's back garden. Rava is saying, Bekofetzes, when it jumps, he's saying that's keren damages. Okay, that's unusual. What it's doing over here is it's doing it in such an unusual way. It's causing, we're not entering into the mind of the animal, but it's almost like it's intentional damage, in the same way that the animal gores, or the same way the animal might kick something. So here, over here, Bekofetzes, it's jumping on top to get at that food. That's keren damages. So yes, you are liable in Rashut HaRabim. But you're also only going to be liable half damages, right? Like all Keren, Keren Tum, right? First time offenders or second time offenders. So you're going to be liable only half damages. That's the difference between Rava and Ilfa over here that the Gemara is bringing. Vehecha itmar de Rava. Where do we see Rava's teaching? Ahad Omer of Oshia, on the following case that was brought by Rabbi Oshia. Behema birishus harabim, an animal in a public domain, holcha v'ochla, it was walking along and it ate petura. Yes, then you're like a regular shein, right? In rishus harabim, you're exempt. But omda v'ochla, if it stood up and ate, I should clarify. Omda really means stand still. Right, it stood still in this particular case. Omdo means to stand up if you're sitting down, but if you're walking, then to be omed means to stop walking. So what it sounds like Roshi is saying is, if it's walking and it eats, then it's exempt. But omdo va'ochla, if it stops walking and eats, then it's chayavus. So what do you mean, maishna holcha de urchehu omdo nami urchehu? What's the difference, right? It's walking along, it's normal for it to eat. If it stops walking and eats, that's also normal for it to eat. So no. Omar Rava, that's why Rava came along and explained, when it said Omda, it doesn't mean it stops walking and stands still, it means it stops walking and jumps up to try and get it. And the fact that it's Kofetzes, the fact that it jumps up and tries to, it seems to be causing this intentional damage, so it's going to be liable. Again, it's going to be liable Keren damages, and therefore half damages, but it still is going to be liable in Rosh Hashanah, which is unusual for eating. Okay, everyone, that's the flow of the Gemara. Again, we had Ilfa. Ilfa was saying it's Shein, slightly different case with Shein damages. If it stretches out its neck, he considered that to be Shein, because it's as though you're eating from a private domain. And Rava had explained in a slightly different case that if you jump up, if the animal jumps up and sort of seems to be climbing somewhere to try and get the food, then that's considered to be Keren damages. And therefore you would be liable in the Rosh Hashanah in public property, but only half damages. Okay. Boy Rabzeira. Rabzeira has the following question. Very interesting case. Misgalgel Mahu. Although we'll have a big debate as to what exactly the case is. Let's read it according to Rashi first. This was the Rashi I started before. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Let's read the Gemara. Boy Rabizera. Rabizera asked the following case. Misgalgel Mahu. If the food moved, let's say for now that's how I'll do it. If the food was moving, Misgalgel literally means to roll, but the point is it's on the move, this food. So what's the halacha? We'll explain what that means. Hey chidomi, how exactly? What does that mean? Kagon de kaima omir. Let's say there was a pile of food, pile of grain, regular animal food, something that the animal would be eating. There was a pile of it birshas ayochid in a private domain. V'komis galgel v'osim birshas ayochid l'rishus arabim, and it's rolling, it's moving now from the rishus ayochid to the rishus arabim. My, what's the halacha? So that's the case. Okay, so that's the case. Let's before, but still unclear exactly where is the animal eating that food, right? So we've said that the Gemara says that it starts in the Rosh Hashanah Yochid, and now it's on the move from Rosh Hashanah Yochid to Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Now, has it reached the Rosh Hashanah Rabim? Has it not reached the Rosh Hashanah Rabim? Is it still in the Rosh Hashanah Yochid? Where does the animal actually eat this food? So Rashi says as follows. Rashi says, second line, to the very end of the second line of Rashi, right at the top, Kagon de Kaima Omer Birshus Nizak. Again, so this is the case, right? You have this pile of food in the Rishus HaNizak, the private, in the damaged party's domain. Ubehema Birshus HaRabim, he says. And the animal's in the public domain. Umizgalgeles V'osim Rishus HaYochid L'Rishus HaRabim. It takes it from the Rishus HaYochid to the Rishus HaRabim and eats it there. Right? The point is that the animal has taken it from one place to another. Now, usually we say if the animal eats something in public domain, it's exempt. But over here, what did it do? It went into the private domain, it took the food out, then brought it into the public domain. So Rashi says, so you're liable. Right? So that's what the case is. And let's do the next Rashi as well, actually, because he sort of spells out the question. According to Rashi, what's the question? Why is that a question? That should clearly be, I would think, clearly be liable. It has taken the food from the Rishut HaNizak, right? It's gone in and taken the food from the private domain. So Rashi says, "My, what's the question of the Gemara? Bosar achila azlinon upatura. Do we follow the place where it was eaten, right? The follow the eating, and therefore it would be exempt. Bosar deshaklot le azlinon vechayeva. So do we follow the place where it was taken from, and therefore you would be liable?" And this, oh, important, Rashi spells this out. Should be obvious, but again, spells it out. V'hu hadin nami. This is now the first narrow line of the Rashi. V'hu hadin nami. The same thing applies. I behema birshus anizak. The other way around. If the animal is in the private domain, v'omir birshus arabim, and the food is in the public domain, right? There, and V'gilgalto mirishus harabim, and it took the food from the rishus harabim, from the public place, lirishus ayochin, into its own field. Ibasar achila azlinan chayeves. If we're following the place where it eats the food, then it's going to be liable because it's eating it actually in private in rishus aniza. But ibasar the shagla lay azlinan. If we're following where it was taken from, then in that case, the reverse case, then it will be exempt because it's taken the food from the Rosh Hashanah, and that's where it starts off. Okay, so that's Rashi's version of the Gemara. That's start number one. But Tosus has the following. Tosus says not convinced for a few different reasons. The first Tosus, right on the top. Let's skip a little bit. I'm not going to do the whole thing, but he's not so convinced of this. He says it's very difficult because we have another case on Chof Alef Amud Beis, which we're going to get to, of a dog that pulls the charora, we actually saw that case a bit earlier, but the main Gemara that deals with it is later. But a dog that pulls a loaf of bread or something, or some sort of biscuit or something with a coal attached to it, right? And the coal set fire to something. So that again, the animal was pulling it elsewhere. So he says that's one challenge that you have. Va'od de loshon misgalgel. He's not convinced of why does the Gemara use the word misgalgel? The fact that it's rolling, that's a strange way to say it. Makes it sound like it's going on its own. It doesn't make it sound like the animal moved it. It doesn't say it velokcho or something, right? It doesn't say the animal took it. It says it was rolling. It sounds like it happened of its own accord. Not literally of its own accord, but it was blown by the wind or something. You know, it made its own way there. Venire lari. So let's go from here. The fourth line down in this Tosas, Venira Lari, he says, I think this is what the Gemara is saying. Kagon de kaimi peris berishus anizak. The fruits are in the rishus anizak, in this private property. They're on their way into the Rishus Harabim. Yes, if it were not that the animal stops them with its mouth, i.e. the animal does put its mouth into the Rishus HaNizak, does put its mouth into the private domain, into the garden, and eats the fruits, but they were rolling down the hill anyway. The animal does put its mouth into the private domain and eats the fruits, but ve'ilav ma'agvason b'piya, the achaltan, if he wouldn't have eaten it there, shom, ha'yosofan laniach b'rishas harabim. They were about to fall into the Rishus HaRabim anyway. They were about to fall into the public domain. The Gemara is asking, are they considered to be, since they're on the move there anyway, are they already considered to be like they're resting in the public domain, in the middle of the street? Or, or not? Are they considered? Okay, so that's the, and again, we could, Tosus sort of spells it out a bit further. Tosus also works, what works for Tosus is the fact that the Gemara also only quotes one case. The Gemara is only talking about where the food starts in Rishus HaYachid, in private domain, and is making its way out. Rashi, we said, added on that he says it works both ways. Doesn't matter whether it starts in private and ends up in public, or whether it starts in public and ends up in private. According to Rashi, it doesn't make a difference. According to Tosfos, it does make a difference. Right? It's the Gemara is intentionally only talking about one of them. Right, everyone with me. The Gemara is intentionally saying that it starts in the private domain. It's on the way into the public domain. The animal eats it where? Eats it in the garden. Does eat it in the garden. So therefore, you might think it's liable. But he says no. It was on the way. It was rolling out into the street anyway. If it would have made it to the street and the animal would have eaten it there, then for sure you would be exempt. So that's the question of the Gemara. We still haven't answered it. We still haven't explained which side we come down on, but that's the question. So we have two different questions. According to Rashi, the question is where the animal took the food from one to the other, and according to Tosus, it was moving on its own but hadn't yet made it into the public domain. It was falling, or it was rolling, or blowing from the Rishus HaNizak to the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, so. So let's go. Okay, so Toshma, let's bring a proof. Okay, we're going to bring a proof to try and figure out which side we follow, which is correct. The Tony Rabchia taught as follows: Masoi, you have a some sort of food, right? Like a bag, for example, of barley. Miktoso bifnim umiktoso bachutz. Part of it is outside, and part of it is inside. Ochla bifnim chayeves, ochla bachutz, patura. If the animal ate it on the inside, then it's liable. If it ate it on the outside, then it's exempt. My love, misgalgel va'osi, right? Isn't this talking about where the bag, as it were, is on the move, right? And that's why, well, again, you have to figure out, are we talking about according to Rush, or are we talking about according to Tosus? So let's stick with Rashi for now. So my love is galgel v'osi. Aren't we talking about a case where it's sort of, you know, the point is it has eaten it in the Rishus HaRabim? I guess it depends which way you're doing it. Rashi, we don't have to follow it inside, but Rashi says kagon she'achalto kulo. He says where you ate all of it. V'hochi ka'omar achalto bifnim kagon she'gilgala as kulo bifnim. Chayeves, the Gemara is saying if it had pulled the entire bag inside, then it would be liable. But if it had pulled the entire bag outside, then it would have been exempt. So therefore, clearly we're going basar achila according to the place where it ate the food. That's how Rashi reads this case. According to Tosus, presumably the case is where it stayed, where it was. Right. The point is it stayed where it was, and the question is which one is the key. Which one is the key? So the Gemara says, no, that's not a fair case. Eimov ochla al masha bifnim chayeves al masha bachutz patura. So the Gemara had said, if it ate it inside, if it ate it outside, i.e. if the animal had eaten the food inside or outside, that was the key thing. So the Gemara says, no, it means ochla al masha bifnim. on that which was on the outside, on that which was on the inside. It's not about where the animal is, it's about where the food was, i.e. you know, you sort of divide this bag in half, whichever half was on the outside, then you're liable for that, on the inside, then you're liable for that half, whichever half was on the outside, in the public domain, then you're going to be exempt for that one. But the point is, it doesn't help us with the Mizgalgel case, it doesn't help us with the with the other one, whether it's according to Rashi because the animal moved it there, or according to Tosas because it's on the move on its own. So, we're rereading it. It's not ochlo bifnim, not it ate it inside, but alma shebifnim. It ate what was on the inside. Okay, it ate what was on the inside. Ibo yisema. Perhaps we could suggest as follows: Kika omer Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia, who taught this case, when did he apply it? What was he referring to? Bipasila da aspasta. He's talking about something which is very, very long. Okay, long food. Okay, which is spread across both, and the fact that it's spread across both. Then again, but either way, it's not really a proof for. It's not really a proof for us, unless I'm missing something. Yeah, okay, in lahakiyach mikan. Yeah, exactly. No, you're in session. Yeah. That doesn't help us either way. Doesn't help us either way. So do we have a conclusion? Am I missing something? I think the Gemara's just going to leave this away. Leave this as it is. We don't seem to have a conclusion.
Says there is uncertainty about the halacha.
Yeah, okay, good. Alright, so that's how I understand it as well. Okay, good. Uncertainty about the halacha. So we basically attempted a proof, we knocked it out, but then the Gemara just moves on. Moves on to the next part, so we don't have an answer to that question of Miss Galga. So we're not sure what we would do in that case. Okay, not sure what we would do in that case.
Do we even know for sure now what
Mr.
Galgal means? Does it mean the animal moves it, or does it mean it's not moves it?
That's the debate between Rashi and Tosas.
Yeah, I know. We haven't resolved that.
You can never resolve a debate between. You can never resolve that. That's the meaning. Depends which opinion you're going to follow.
Okay, they're just two.
Yeah, they're two different opinions. Two different opinions. Yeah. According to two different opinions. You mean which of them would we follow? I don't think we have a clear. No, between Rashi and Tosas, we don't have a. There are some times in Rishonim where we have, a tendency to follow one over another. I think Rashi and Tosas usually carry relatively equal weight. They tend to carry relatively equal weight. It may also depend on, again, like what we said on Shabbat. We talked about Rove on Shabbat, right, following a majority. It could be some Rishonim. Other Rishonim tend to side with one or the other. If you get a consensus from other Rishonim, you look in the Rashba or the Ritva or whoever else and see who tends to side with one over the other, then that also helps often to determine which one we follow. I have a note here that says that the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rambam also seem to follow Rashi. So that would be my guess. My guess is we would follow that as well. That seems to be a strong consensus. You have three strong Rishonim, relatively early Rishonim, who go according to that. Then that would be my sense. Let's see if we have the Rabbeinu Chananel over here. It must be over here. Just confirm. Okay, I don't see it over here, but I don't see it at a glance over here. I'm sure it's in here. Anyway, so as I say, but machlokes between Rashi and Tosas, you would often have other rishonim who tend to side with one over another, and that's what that's presumably whichever one we would follow. Okay, next section of the Gemara, ochlo kasus. If it ate clothing, right? This is taking us back to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah that we'd started last time on Yud Tet Amud Bet had pointed out that if the animal eats clothing, that's not considered to be shein, right? Because it's not ro'oila. That's not normal for animals to eat that, and therefore that's chatzi nezek. That's considered to be keren. That's like causing intentional damage, like goring or like kicking or biting or anything like that. And therefore it's going to be liable half damages. Ochlo ksus, that's what it was talking about. Ahai, right? What exactly is the Mishnah talking about? What's the case? What's the case that it's talking about? What type of unusual eating is this? So Omar Rav says, "Akulhu." The Gemara, the when the Mishnah says, I think the Gemara's question is basically: is it talking about in a private domain or is it talking about in a public domain? Birushas and Nizak. That's what Shane is usually talking about, Birushas and Nizak, and therefore we're talking about. Is this an unusual type of Shane, and therefore you're not. It's an unusual type of shein in the same way that tsroros maybe was an unusual type. I think that's the question. And therefore you're paying half damages, but it's still within shein, or is it keren damages? I sort of jumped the gun a bit. Omar Rav says, Akulhu, my timer, what's the reason? Kol hamashane uvo acher b'shinabo potter. So let's say it was in the Rishut HaRabim, was in the private domain. So what's the reason that Rav says that you would be exempt, right? Just like you would be exempt on regular Shein, Rishut HaRabim, because Shekol HaMashane Uvo Acher Rishinabo, if the first party did something unusual, and then the second party came along and did something unusual, then Potter. So what's the two unusual things over here? One person is leaving out their clothes, that's considered to be unusual, the fact that you've just simply sort of left your shirt in the public domain, that's the unusual thing. And now the second thing is that the fact that the animal came along and ate it, right? The fact that the animal came along and ate it. And therefore one led to the other, and that seems to be enough to say that you're going to be exempt. It's not just... It's not enough. You're not going to be liable half damages. You're in fact going to be liable full damages. I see. Okay, so we should have gone back to the Mishnah. I've been confusing myself because I didn't really reread the Mishnah. So if we just turn back to Yud Tet Amud Bet very quickly, I'll just reread the Mishnah, and I think this is now I understand what the Gemara is asking. Apologies. Ketzad Hashein Muedes. Right from the beginning of our Mishnah, the Mishnah had listed what does it mean when a shein is muad, when a shein causes classic damage and is liable to pay. Le'echol sara'oila, to eat what is normal for it to eat. Such as, habahemim muedes le'echol peros v'yirokos, it's normal to eat fruits and vegetables. Och laksus okelim, if it ate clothes or utensils, mishalim chatzinez, it pays half damages. Fine. Full stop. Now the Mishnah says as follows: Bamed devar mamurim. What is this referring to? Birushus harabi, birushus anizak, in the private domain, in the damaged party's property. Avol birushus harabim potter, but in the public domain, you're exempt. So now the Gemara wants to know that line when it says the difference between birushus anizak and birushus harabim. Is that going just on the first case, or is that also going on the second part of ksus and kalim? Right, when it says you're only liable in the birushus anizak, does that mean when it eats fruit and vegetables, you're liable in birushus anizak? And the second half was its own case, or does it mean it's referring to the whole thing? That's what the excuse me. That's what it was referencing. So Aha is saying which is the Ksus V'Kelim, which is that going on? Rav says Akulhu. Rav says that that line of Rosh HaNezik versus Rosh HaRabim is going on the whole thing, i.e. if the animal eats clothes in public domain, it's fully exempt. It's not just paying half damages, it's fully exempt. Why? Then the Gemara says, my time, the reason for that is kol hamashane uvo acher b'shinobo potur, because one person came along, did something unusual by hanging their clothes in a public place, and then the animal came along and ate it, which is also unusual, and therefore it's a double words into it, but it's not just a the fact that you have one person who starts in an unusual way, the second person comes along and does a second unusual thing, then there's an exemption in that sort of case. Ushmuel Omer. Shmuel says no. He disagrees with Rav. We often have many machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. It's a very common pairing, a debate pairing in the Gemara. So Rav says it's referring to the whole thing. Shmuel Omer, lo shonu elo Peros v'Yerokos, Aval Ksus v'Kelim Chayeves. When it says that you're exempt in Roshus HaRabim, that was only referring to the fruits and vegetables. Then the animal's exempt, but Ksus v'Kelim is liable. Why? The Gemara doesn't spell it out over here, but the point is it's because it's Keren, it's considered to be Keren damages. It's like the animal gored. So just like the animal gored in the public domain, you're also liable half damages. So too, if it ate clothes or utensils, then again it's going to be liable in the public domain. V'chein omer Reish Lakish, and similarly Rav Lakish said the same thing as Rav. He also agreed Akulhu. He says the whole thing, it's applying to the whole first line, the first two lines, I guess, of the Mishnah. V'oz do Reish Lakish l'tamei, and Reish Lakish is following his own reasoning. We already have a precedent for Reish Lakish saying this. Why? Where? To Omar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says as follows. In a separate place. I think it's a bit later on, about four daf away. I have over here a note, Chof Dalad Amud Beis. So yeah, four and a half daf. We'll get there soon. Reish Lakish said as follows. Shtei Peros Birushus HaRabim. If you have two... Sorry, Shtei Peros. Shtei. I was about to read the next... You'll see why the next line doesn't make any sense. Shtei Peros Birushus HaRabim. Two animals in the public domain. Achas Ravutza. One is crouching down or lying down. Ve'achas Mehaleches, and one is walking. Okay, so it doesn't make sense to be talking about two fruits. I just misread that. Steporos, two animals. One is crouching down, lying down, and one is walking. Bo'ata mehaleches b'rvutza. The one who is walking kicked, knocked into the one who is lying down. Patura is exempt. Why? But Ravutza b'mahaleches chayeves. But if the one who's lying down kicked the one that was walking, then it's liable. So usually kicking something is considered to be keren, right? We said that was the classic type of keren. But over here, the point is that it's why is it different? So what we're saying is that Reish Lakish is saying the following thing, similar to Rav. Rav had said, what was the exact phrasing? Kol hamashane uva acher v'shinobo potter. So one who does something unusual, party number one does something unusual, party number two then does something unusual based on that, then there's an exemption. So what's the unusual thing? Over here, the unusual thing, the fact that the animal's lying down in the middle of the road is unusual. The second animal comes along and kicks it, that's unusual. So you have, again, party number one does something unusual, party number two acts on that and does something unusual again, then you're exempt. So that's why Reish Lakish says if the walking one kicked the lying down one, then it's exempt. But if the lying down one kicked the walking one, so there was no mashane, because the walking one was acting normally in the Rosh Hashanah. He was walking along normally, and then the lying down one kicked it. So that was the only unusual thing. So therefore, you would be liable keren, and you pay half. Pay half damages, but we see that Reish Lakish and Rav are matching up. You start off with one, and it's also important to note that when he uses this phrase, he says, Kol HaMashane is someone who does something unusual, Uvo Acher V'Shino Bo, that he does something unusual linked to the original unusual thing. It's not something random. It's not like one animal is lying down, and then the other animal came along and ate fruits from its back. right, or something. That's nothing to do with it. That's, oh, I don't know if that's nothing to do with it, but something that would be, you know, one animal is, yeah, is walking on only on its front legs. Let's say, you know, that's unusual. And then the other animal, I guess you could argue in a lot of these cases that maybe it is linked. But the point is, if you find something which is totally not linked, right? If the fact that it's doing a shinui which is not linked, then that would be. That doesn't seem to be what the Gemara is talking about. That doesn't seem to be Reish Lakish's case. Vashino Bo or Rav, right? Some seems to be that they're talking about where you actually do something unusual, where the animal does something unusual based on the first unusual act, based on the first unusual thing. Rabbi Yochanan says as follows: Lo shonu elo peiros v'irokos. So he seems to side with Shmuel. Right, so again, Reish Lakish seemed to side with Rav, Rabbi Yochanan seemed to side with Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are also sparring partners many times in the Gemara. They were also brothers-in-law, so again, makes sense. They were disagreed, viewed things differently. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Lo shonu ela peiros v'yarokos. I was only talking about peiros v'yarokos. That's when you're exempt. But ksus v'kelim, avol ksus v'kelim, chayeves, if it ate clothes or utensils, then it would be liable. So again, it seems to sound like Shmuel. Leimar Rabbi Yochanan leis leider Reish Lakish. Maybe he's disagreeing with Reish Lakish about the other. So Rabbi Yochanan explicitly agrees with Shmuel, right? Reish Lakish we had suggested agrees with Rav because of his case of two cows lying down, right? Rav had been talking about our Mishnah about eating, about Shein. Reish Lakish had his case about two cows, one lying down and one walking along, and Rabbi Yochanan we had said had agreed with Shmuel. Now, Leimar Rabbi Yochanan leis leider Reish Lakish. Maybe he doesn't agree with Reish Lakish, right? About the about afilu b'shtei poros. See, maybe he disagrees in that case as well. So lo, then we say no, that's not the case. Lo olam islei. He does actually agree with Reish Lakish in this case. Rabbi Yochanan can very much agree. Ksus, however, this case is different. Our Mishnah is different. Ksus of the inshi deman cheglimi umitafche. So it says, in a sense, it's normal for a person to put their clothes down momentarily. Is that what he's saying? But for an animal to lie down in the middle of a road is very unusual. So he basically is saying, no, it is a bit normal for a person to put their utensil down or put their clothes down or something. To put something down in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. See if Rashi spells it out. I think that's what he's saying. No, I don't think Rashi comments on that. Okay. Either way, that's what it sounds like. So with this, we are excuse me, saying that basically, although we originally said that Reish Lakish and Rav match up perfectly, Rabbi Yochanan is walking the tightrope between the two. Rabbi Yochanan, in one sense, is agreeing with Shmuel, right? On our Mishnah, he's agreeing with Shmuel and saying that the animal which eats clothes in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim in the public domain would be liable for Karen damages, but he's also agreeing with Reish Lakish, who had talked about these two cows. One had done something unusual by lying down, and the second one had done something unusual by kicking it, and Reish Lakish had said that was exempt. So said Rabbi Yochanan could also say the same thing. He could also follow Reish Lakish, and yet he could also say that in our Mishnah, the animal who ate clothes in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is liable. Why? Because putting clothes down in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is considered normal enough, I guess. And therefore, agree with both of those things, and they don't necessarily match up to the fullest degree. Okay, I think we'll stop there. We'll stop there for this week. There's lots more. All of this has loads of stuff inside of it. You know, lots behind it to sort of go into the reasonings and things like that, but I think we'll pause there for today. It's a good place to stop, and we'll come back again. The next line is also going back to our Mishnah. The next line actually is also a big something which we've skirted around for a long time, talking about how much you're going to pay, right? How do we figure out how you're going to pay? What is the fee based on? Okay? All right, let's stop there.